The shoes match your bow.
There you go.
Hello, everyone. My name is Terry Marie. I am an alcoholic.
Hi.
Hi, and thank you. Thank you for inviting me again. I get invited to this group a lot in the past, and I just could tear up. You know, when I saw Ruben tonight, and I saw Stephanie, and I see all my friends here, I'm speechless. I'm speechless. I stand before you. I stand before you 26 years sober. And I come in here tonight. And first, Mark right away, how responsible, calls me, make sure I'm okay. You know, make sure we're getting here. He knows me. I've been brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I was told by our son's namesake. You know, we named this boy after a man that has served AA for 63 years. And he says, one time he goes, why weren't you at our home group? I said, I had a headache. And he said, you never miss a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because you have a headache. You know, and I was only a year sober. And from that day forward, I take my commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous and everywhere seriously. So when he was calling me, I was like, I'm sorry to give you... Like, because, you know, when you get speakers or your secretary of speakers, you want to make sure, you don't know, sometimes speakers, you know, things happen. But I didn't want to worry you. Sorry, my friend. But the beauty of it, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And that, friends, that gives me deep peace. And that's what I get ease and comfort. And that's what I used to have to drink to get ease and comfort. So I will go anywhere for Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been up since 5 a.m. I start my days early. We live in Simi Valley. It's a long day. And I was just thinking, you know, after work, I was trying to get myself together. I'm trying to put on some makeup. I'm going, I got to you looking, not like I said, it was one of those spiritual awakenings that we get here. It's like, Terry Marie, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't care what you look like. You know, when I walked in here, you did not care what I looked like. I was so broken. I said, what they care about is that I show up. I show up, and like our doctor's opinion says, my job up here tonight is to carry a message of depth and weight. I need to show up and tell you what I used to be like, what happened, and what I am like today. That is my purpose. You know, when Mark asked me, I just said, do you really want me to come back? I was just there. You know, a couple months ago with my husband. And I mean, that's the beauty of it, is that we love each other. You know, we love each other. And even though I don't think I have something to say, God has something to say. You know, I had to go out into the parking lot to get some money from my car. On the way out, I said to Aaron, I got to run out and get some dollar bills and to throw in the basket. And he goes, oh, nobody will know. And, you know, and my initial thought right away is, yeah, I will know. I have to be, you know, we're taught to be self-supporting, put money in the basket. But I run out there, go in my car, and for that split second, there's that beautiful, beautiful sunset. And I get to get quiet, and I get to say the seven-step prayer. You know, my Creator, you know, I am now willing for you to have all of me, good and bad. Please remove every single defect of character so that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. You know, I'm to be useful. I am to be useful. And when I'm in myself, I cannot be useful. So that split second out there with being quiet. I work with little tea case with my head. It's busy all day long. And I say to you, how can I be useful? And I don't like to do this. You know, there's honesty. And when I saw Aaron, there's that sneaky part of me that says, I don't have to throw money in the basket, but I know. You know, and I know I don't like to do this, but I have been trained here that everything I've been asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous has never steered me wrong. It has served me to the best the best. Only good things have come. So thank you. Thank you, Mark, for asking me to come out here. And I get to drive up here. It's bumper-to-bumper traffic on Friday. And I say that, but, you know, we got to be honest up here. It's not, you know, my favorite thing to do, a full week sit in traffic. But I will go to the ends of the earth for Alcoholics Anonymous. I was thinking, I got in a car, and is that I love to drink. Today, I still love to drink. I was thinking about a gin and tonic today on a hot day. You know, and I get in the car with another alcoholic. And there's the world, you know, the world of the spirit. And she's not afraid enough. You know, she's taught well. You know, we talk about one alcoholic talking to the next. It's like, she goes, I don't get those people who say I don't like, you know, I don't talk about what they really, I like to drink. I would still drink if I could. I would still drink if I could. And then she says, you know, in the car right up, you know, I don't understand people who don't talk about that. It's real. You know, I love champagne. I would drink if I still could. But when we're driving up there, there's that ease and comfort. I'm with somebody who's just like me. We haven't known each other for a long time, you know, but there's, you know, there's that spirit. And again, you know, I got to be honest. Sometimes I go, oh, maybe I don't have to go to AA. Maybe I don't have to drive up there. Maybe I can tell Mark, you know what, Mark, I had a bad day. I'm just going to sit here and think about myself. Let me just sit and think about my bad day. But how selfish. Again, back to that man who once told me in Alcoholics Anonymous, he said, you know, you got yours. You know, Terry Marie. And again, I wish my friend, she's April 8th and I'm April 20th, 1998. That is my sobriety date. I have one sobriety date. I hope that you never have to change that ever again. You know, but I go and do these things and I make sure, you know, that, and it does, it sounds good. At 26, I'm like, I got mine. I'm okay. You know, but then again, you know, that man that we named our son after, he has always said, go back out there and give it away. Go back out there and give freely of what you've been given. You know, how selfish of you not to. So, getting all that out of the way. it is nice to see you. You know, there's no other place in the world that I'd rather be. And for the alcoholic of my type, when I got to you, I didn't like anything. I didn't like anybody, anything, anyone. Let's get the statistics out of the way. I know Tracy's not here, my Orange County Tracy from the East Coast. She's not here tonight. Yeah. Known her for since 1998. It's when I got sober, I met her. I am born and raised in Middletown, New York, a great little town in the Catskills. It was fun. It was when you could grow up and go outside and ride your bike, you know, and your parents didn't have to worry about you. No cell phones, no... Kids didn't all day long. You know, we were out there, and I was having fun. I was born to an Irish-American dad, a Puerto Rican mom. I love seeing Ruben because my Puerto Rican cousin, Ruben, I love him. And when I see Ruben, I don't know where he is. I can't, there's so many people in here. There he is. It makes me feel... I met him when you guys were at your old place before COVID, and that's another thing that I never want to take for granted. I just could tear up. When we went through COVID, you know, my home group is the Big Book Bellflower group, and then coupled with Thousand Oaks speaker meeting. I've been going to those meetings for all my sobriety. Our Sunday night meeting suffered. You know, it was a big group, and we forget, you know, COVID, we couldn't go to meetings in person. And, you know, that meeting got down, bless you, that meeting got down to 7 people. You know, and I know you suffered, and may I never forget, you know, how dare me, I'll drive anywhere. You know, I'll drive to Chula Vista in person, you know, and I'll drive back up here, because how quickly we forget, we didn't get to talk in person for a while. And that was hard for me, because I need you. I need this one-on-one. You know, I need the in-person contact. Zoom is good, not knocking it. I love it now. I hated it at first. But that's, you know, that's me. That's my alcohol, you know, my alcoholism is I don't like things at first, but then when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought this is the worst thing that ever happened to me. I was like, oh, this is the worst, you know, we'll get there. But I'm grateful. It's good to see this meeting back up, back up and running. And Mark asked about our meeting tonight, you know, our Sunday meeting, we're back up. I mean, Vanessa just gave me my 26-year cake there. You know, and there's no greater gift than walking in a room and just feeling, again, when I walk in here, I get that ease and comfort. I don't have to drink again, just for today. You know, just right now, I'm here with you right now. So in that great little town, I grew up to a, you know, an Irish dad, Puerto Rican mom. How much time do I have? Thank you, love. And, you know, I wish it was the house that our children have grown up in, but it's not. I get to do, like the doctor's opinion says, I get to recreate my life, and I did for our kids. But our home consisted of, my mom's Puerto Rican. I don't know if you have any Latino friends. They can be very feisty. My daddy loved to drink. He's one of those hard drinkers that they talk about in the book. They talk about it very well. I suffer from alcoholism. My daddy suffered from, he was a hard drinker. He actually died of cirrhosis of the liver. You know, so he was the hard drinker. He was a bartender by trade. And my mom was a full-time mommy, but she also worked a part-time job, and they fought. You know, I grew up in a home where I'd be sleeping. You know, I think like 9 years old, I remember sleeping, and my dad would just come home so drunk, you know, and then just beat the crap out of my mom. You know, and I would wake up like that. And today, you know, when I think of, I work with children, I work in an elementary school, and their souls, you know, they're so, my heart can race even thinking about it. But, you know, we have to share, you know, in a general way what it used to be like, and that's how I grew up, you know, and my brothers too. I have an older brother, Mickey, and a younger brother. I'm smack in the middle. You know, so I grew up like that, but my thing, but it was fun. You know, I would go out, I'd go and play in the neighborhood, we'd build tree houses, and I spent 18 years in my little circle. I lived on a circle, it was called Madeline Terrace, and everybody knew each other. And it was fun, but I'd love to get out of the house because you literally, my maiden name is Johnston, and everybody would be like, you could hear people talk, oh, the Johnstons, because my dad is 6'4", and he was loud. He was so loud, and I was always so embarrassed, you know. I don't have the tools I have today, but I would walk out of the house like so, because you could hear him literally two streets down. I'm glad today I just stay in my own box, you know, and I don't listen, but that's rough. It's rough on a kid, you know. It's rough on a 9-year-old kid, and growing up that way, and for my brothers. And I would just go out and about, play, very athletic. And I know my friend Mark always talks about a zippity-doo-dah, that little, you know, I can never say it properly, zippity-doo-dah. And that's kind of like my nature. Like, I grew up like that. And, you know, always happy, and I could just put that stuff to the side. And that's kind of how, I kind of had to. It was a self-mechanism because my home life, you know, it was hard. It broke my heart because I love deeply. I have that Latino in me. And my mama, she, even though she went through that, she still loved us. She loved deeply. She still loved my father. And she would say, you know, Mooney, Kenny, his name is, but she'd go, his nickname was Mooney. She goes, Mooney, I'm going to stay with you until Kenny, my younger brother, turns 18, and then I'm divorcing you. And she would tell him flat out, I'm going to divorce you, Mooney. And she goes, I'm only staying here for the kids so they can grow up in one household, one school district, you know, and they can be together. And that's the kind of love she had. She endured all that pain, all that emotional abuse, just so we could stay in the same house. And you know what? I am really grateful for that. And she's alive today, but I don't know if I can ever sit and tell her that. She's not one of us. She's a normie, but how I'm a mom now. And I'm grateful that I'm asked to talk during this week. It's appreciation week at work. I'm being appreciated. You know, I get to talk and appreciate the thing that I love. And then Monday I get to talk at my second home group. But the love, it's Mother's Day weekend. But a love that a mother can endure all that pain and abuse for that long, you know, just so we could stay together. And she did that. We stayed in that home for 18 years. I tried to be a good girl, high school. You know, I was athletic. I had good grades. I played a lot of sports. And I just stayed out of the house. You know, and I thought the sports would fix me. Because, you know, when you burn up that extra energy, it feels good. It just releases those endorphins. And that helped me a lot. However, I got to get right into the drinking. I started drinking when I was 9. I started drinking when I was 9 years old. My first drink, I remember my first, I remember my very last. It was a Seagram 7. I went down to my friend. I'd always go to my friend Deanna's. We are still friends today. We were friends since first grade, and Deanna was like the Brady Bunch family. Her parents, they had 6 kids. Deanna and Cy, Marilyn and Cy got along well. Everybody loved each other. They had dinner every night. You know, and back in the 70s, they had, in New York, they had these rec rooms, and they had shaggy rugs, and they had the bars with the, you know, the mirrors on it, and they had it stocked with booze. Yeah, see, I like my liquids. Lots of booze. And I would go to Deanna's, not just mainly for the drinking, but I'd go to Deanna's for peace. But when I went to Deanna's house, I remember I sat up on the bar and her brother John poured me Seagram 7 and ginger ale. I had a couple of those. And, you know, it was good. It felt good. You know, I didn't become a daily drinker at 9 years old. But it did feel good. It did something for me. And it says, Mark's sponsor says it so well. I love the, not right away, but I did not know produced by alcohol. The effect, thank you, growing up. The effect produced by alcohol. I tell you, I've been up since 5, bear with me. And I do, I love the effect produced, just like I love the effect of Alcoholics Anonymous. Same thing. Alcoholics Anonymous works just like a drink did for me. It takes a little bit slower, and I got to do a lot more. But I love the effect produced by alcohol. I loved it when I took that first drink. I think about gin and tonics, and I kind of like, I salivate. I'm like, wow, because I know what it will do for me immediately. I don't like to work. But I've worked hard. My sponsor today, Tara, she says, don't let anything disrupt. You work so hard at your peace of mind, your spiritual condition. Don't let anything disrupt that. Terry Marie, stay on top of it. And that's what I do, you know, but I know a drink will do that for me. You know, and I'm grateful. I'm constantly reminded. We see everybody around us. So many people going back out trying to do it. My friend tonight, go back out, try to do it. And I tell her, I mean, that's God's grace. I love it. Amazing grace for me because I don't have to do it. So, you know, I went on my merry way. I did that. I stayed in Middletown till I was 18. And again, I had no guidance, no parental guidance. When I turned 18, I kind of had to figure out what I wanted to do. I always wanted to get out. I was restless, irritable, and discontented. That's why I love that, the doctor's opinion in our book. Welcome to the newcomers. You know, when I was here, I try to put on a little makeup is because the first sponsor I heard in Alcoholics Anonymous, when she stood up here behind the podium, I couldn't believe it. Her name was Sharon B. at the time, and I just could not believe how beautiful and the attraction and where she was, what she did, the places she went. And when I was sitting here, when I was a newcomer, I know how you feel. And when I looked at her, she did her job up here. I couldn't believe, the transformation. And she was 26 years sober when I came in. So that's why I worry about that. But you know what? You guys, you love me anyway. So, I mean, that's the beauty of it. I can come in here and you still love me. So, You know, I love that I can pause and be quiet and be okay with it. 18, hard to believe. So my parent, like I told you, my mom, her name's Carmen. Carmen said to my dad, you know, 18, you know, my brother turned 18. She sold the house. But again, back to the doctor's opinion, I'm restless, irritable, and discontented by nature. And when I turn 18, you know, what's going to fix me? You know, let's go. I packed up and I moved to Boston. I went away to school. I said, you know what? I went to a college. I didn't do any research. I had no guidance. And I went to an all-women's school, private, up in Boston. And I took off, and my parents were like, you know, why don't you think about an in-state college? Would be cheaper. You know, they kind of guided me a little bit, gave me suggestions, but I just took off. I went up there, and it was a very private school. I took out loans, and it's interesting. It was a women's all, a women's school, and it was private, and it was a dry campus. You cannot drink. I didn't know. I don't know why I picked that school. You know, who knew? Who knew? But, you know, in the doctor's opinion where it says, you know, I knew, I was like, maybe this will fix it. I just started that, you know, restless, irritable, and discontented. And I said, you know, maybe this will help me feel better. So I went to an all-women's school, and one of the first rules is that you're not allowed to bring in men. You're not allowed to bring in booze. On the weekend, it shuts down. And, you know, in short, that's a two-year school. I did get my associate's degree, and I was an RA, resident assistant of the dorm. And one of the requirements was is you cannot let men come in. You cannot let booze. And here was the start of kind of the selfishness and the self-seeking and the dishonesty. Is not so much towards, you know, me, but here's all these, you know, parents paying for these kids to go to school, and they would say I was voted in and asked to be a resident director. So I was an RA of the director, I mean of my dorm, and it's probably 300 women. And on the weekends, what I would do, they would trust me with the keys, everything. And you know, these are the outlines. Oh, sure. And on the weekends, I would let all the guys come from the, you know, the boys' school. They would all, it was funny because they would just sit there in the window with the glass, and there would be the cases of beer and all the stuff going up the stairs. And then there's those good girls who want to go to school, who want to learn, who want to follow the rules. And they would just look at me, you know, and that's, you know, that's what I did. And you know, I finally graduated from that school with a very low GPA. But they did kick me out. They did kick me out of that position, and I didn't get kicked out of the dorm. But that's right. And I would just, you know, I started that. I started that way of I don't care, you know, about you, and I don't care about the consequences. All I care is what I get. I want to drink. I want to meet people. I don't care about you, you know. Or I just want to feel good. And, you know, and I did that. I did that for 2 years, and I graduated from that college, and I ended up staying in Boston. And, you know, and I can't say, they say in the, a lot of people, they say, I know when I crossed that line, or I know that I was an alcoholic, I was born an alcoholic. I don't get that. You know, I do know that I was restless and irritable and discontented. But what I do know was that it was starting to become a problem. I enjoyed it. I loved my drinking. And then I, you know, in Boston, I started to, as soon as I graduated, I got a great job. This woman hired me, and we started a consulting company, and we started this company, and it was wonderful. She and I and another girl started it, and I started to make a lot of money. I'm only 21 years old, living in Boston, and having a good time. You know, it's a great town for a young woman. My sponsor is picking up her daughter right now from there. And I said, what a great, great city for a young girl, for a young woman. And I lived in that city for 6 years, you know, and I did a lot of my drinking. And it's funny because when I got to you, I never got a DWI. And I would sit and listen to you, and you would talk about it. DUIs, in New York they called them DWIs. And I realized I never had a car. I never had a car. In Boston, I did. I would drink and walk, right? And I did. I took the T everywhere, and it was a great town. And that's when it was working. Alcohol was working for me, and I loved it. And I drank, and I walked, and I had a great time. And then this woman said to me, "Hey, Terry Marie, that business I started with that woman was a sales job, and I made a lot of money. But I also like to work out. I was a big athlete, and I worked out. And I worked out at this gym. But I used to teach aerobics." And I loved it. It was back in the 80s, the late 80s, or step aerobics came out. And I started teaching aerobics, and I loved to work out. And when I was at the gym one time, I'm thinking, I could teach a class and make, for only an hour, and make as much as I make for a whole day of work. You know, and this is when my thinking started to kind of get a little... I said, well, let me quit that good job and let me just start teaching so I can work less and drink more. You know, work less. but here's the hard part is that I'm in a health club. I'm healthy. You know, I'm teaching 3 or 4 classes a day, making a lot of money, having a good time, staying physically fit. I look good on the outside, right? I couldn't be an alcoholic, or I couldn't have a problem with alcohol. So I was, you know, doing that, and I quit that job. And Kip, I remember Kip Hollister. I love her today. Still keep in touch with her. And she still has that company. It's all over the United States now. And Kippy just said, "Please don't go, Terry Marie. You're my best. You're one of my best consultants." And I was like, "Kip, thank you. You know, thank you for everything, but I got to go." It was 2 years later, and she helped me, you know, so much. And I'm like, I got to go. My loyalty to anybody, I just couldn't be loyal. Couldn't be committed. You know, I'm like, I got it. And she was so sad to see me go. It broke her heart. But I'm like, I'll be down, you know, I'll just be down at the gym down the road. You can come visit. And it did. It broke her heart. She loved me. And I took off. And I did that for 4 or 5 years. And the woman that I was working for, she said, "Hey, Terry Marie, I have a contract. I have a contract. Would be working in the Desert Storm." She says, "I have a contract for 4 months working in the Middle East training the Desert Storm troops." Our government contracted with the troops, and what they did is 19, it was Desert Storm 1990, June, and what they would do, they had the Cunard cruise ship docked in Bahrain, and the soldiers would come on just for R&R to get out of the desert. You know, it was R&R. And she said, "It's wonderful contract, wonderful pay." She goes, and she and the government, I got screened. I got screened, and 20 of us from the United States got to go. Only 20 fitness professionals, and I was one of them. It was such an honor, me and my friend Ina. So we all got everything taken care of. We got flown over there, and what an honor. You know, what an honor. But when I got there, I was 26 years old, and this is when I knew. This is when I knew something's wrong. I got there, and I don't know if any of you have ever been on a cruise ship, but you know, you get, it's all the entertainment. I love cruises. I love them sober. I love them drunk. you get all, you know, it's the whole bells and whistles. Even though we were docked, we still had entertainment, you know, gambling, all that stuff. And the main thing for me is when she said to me, "Your room and board is paid for, all the your food, your all the alcohol you can drink." When she said that, I was like, wow. I still have my lips. I'm like, I was like, really? All the alcohol you can. And, you know, I love it. I love to drink in large quantities. I always have. And especially on cruises, it just feels good. You get dressed up and drink. So when I went over there, I got my nice little room, you know, and I was, it was like Julie McCoy, and, you know, I can't throw out his name, it's too old, Richard Simmons, you know, packed together. On a dock, and then 900 men, There were some women, though. There were some women, but there was a lot of men. And I know, and I was single. And fit. Very fit. And energetic and exciting. Enthusiastic. The conviviality we were talking about in here. You know, I always thought when I got to, oh my God, you know, I'm going to be so boring and glum. And the conviviality I searched for in the drink and in the bars, but I get it here. I get it here so easily, and just with us. I get over there, and I was like, wow, you know, we got everything. We got ushered in. We were like royalty over there. We got ushered in, and I don't know if you know anything about the Middle East, but it was pretty intense, and I'm grateful that I got to go there because I don't know if I'd ever go there on a visit, but I got over there, and everything was taken care of, and the, I forget what he's called, but he's like the head of our military or our armed forces, the big guy, the general. Anyway, he was there when he welcomed us, and he kind of just gave us, you know, what the runaround over there, because it's not as liberal as we are here. It's different, and I'm a woman, but so when we got over there, we got briefed what we were supposed to do, not supposed to do, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if you've ever been to the Middle East, this was June of 1990. It's 120 degrees. It is about 90% humidity. I was okay with that because we did have AC on the boat, but I got there, you know, you got to drink a lot of water. I'm like, all right, so the men's would come on three-day rotation, so we're ready. We get on there, I get on the boat, and we start going, you know, and all the men come on, we greet them, we're the greeters, and then we start having fun. And I had too much fun. I wish I got a do-over. I have to stop at 9:15. 9:13. Perfect. I got to wrap. I got to quickly get in. So it was fun, but I got, you know, we got over there, and I don't have to drive. I don't got to move anywhere. I mean, I'm on the boat. So the armed forces come on, and they're just lovely. They're just so happy to be treated. They're being. Our military spent millions and millions of dollars. We did. Our tax money spent millions of dollars for that boat to be over there for 10 months. They come on, and they were so excited to get out of the desert, and it was fun. And I would drink. You know, I'd have fun during the day. I could maintain it. I could actually, you know, do what I was supposed to do my job, and then, you know, at night have a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I would drink with it was the Cunard. It's a British ship, so I'd always drink with the officers up in the officers. You know, those two. But it was on. I would drink anything I could get my hands on as much as I could. You know, I know. And it worked. All right, I'm 3 months in, okay? I'm 3 months into that contract. 3 months have gone by. We're having fun. Things are going well. And all of a sudden, I'm waking up and I'm scared. All of a sudden, I have this side, this pain in my side. And I thought, oh my God, I'm having appendicitis. I was so scared. I was, you know, 26. I'm far away from home. And I run down to the ship's doctors, the medical. And he took a couple tests. And I thought for sure, oh my God, my glasses are way down here. I knocked my God. I thought for sure I was having appendicitis. That's how painful. Or kidney stones. You know, if you ever had kidney stones, it was that painful. Took a couple tests and came back. He goes, honey, do you? He goes, do you drink alcohol? And I go, you know, a little. Right? Just a little. You know, a couple bottles of wine here and there. And yeah, I said, sometimes why? And he goes, you're highly dehydrated. I go, oh. You know, he goes, I'm going to hook you up to some IVs. I sat there all day. I got IVs. I got rehydrated. I slept, finally. All that dancing and having fun. I slept, rehydrated. And then he goes, honey, you might want to be mindful about how much you drink. You know, he kind of tried to talk to me. You know, we have an almost 20-year-old girl. And he was talking to me like a dad. You know, just sit and say, hey, honey. Just want to be mindful about how much you drink. And I was like, well, I said, thank you. Thanks, pal. Thanks, pal. I got this under control. And that has been my motto, too. I have always been self-willed. You know, I know more than you. You know, even at, like, 2 years old, I know more than you. You know, all my life. And I said, thank you. And then I went on my merry way. And then, like, 2 weeks later, I'm back in that. I'm back in that doctor's office again. Same exact thing. And I said, oh, I said, maybe it's a kidney stone. And, you know, how we can be, how that self-deception and lying to myself. Maybe, you know, and it's not. I know what it is. And then he also said, you know, honey, I think you should, it's 90% humidity here. It's 100. You can't drink a lot of coffee or alcohol. Okay, and I wish I could say I got sober right then. But, you know, that continued. That self-will continued well until I was 32 years old. You know, I'm going to control and enjoy my drinking. You know, that line in the book, I'm going to control and enjoy my thinking because I'm different. I'm different from you. I can do it. Vanessa knows I'm going to go try it again. You know, that mental blank spot, you know, that defense must come from a higher power. And I'm grateful. That's what I wanted to say first is my God is generous. Alcoholics Anonymous has been generous to me. I can cry at the, I mean, just watching these kids give me, it has been so generous that how dare me not want to drive out here? How dare me not want to listen to another alcoholic? You know, it is beyond generous. And, you know, and I was over there and I was shaking my head going, something's wrong. I don't feel right. You know, not only physically, but mentally. Mentally, spiritually, physically, I started to feel. Now, let me just quickly give you some stats, is that now I'm sleeping with these soldiers. You know, I'm sleeping with the guys in the band. I'm telling you, you're my boyfriend. You know, it's all a lot. I can't remember who I slept with. I'm seeing a soldier going, oh, my God. You know, it's just on. I could never be in a monogamous relationship. So I flew back to the United States, you know, and I moved up to Canada to be with one of those guys. And then my father just finally said, fly out. He goes, honey, fly out and see your brother in California. Go stay with your brother. And I flew out. I just said, okay, Dad. Because he said, how are you doing? I wasn't talking to my parents. I'm not talking to my mom. I'm not talking to anybody. They kept calling me and saying, how you're doing? And I say, I'm tired. I heard that, Vanessa, we know that alcoholic, I'm tired. I was tired. I just wanted to grow up, be a good person, be a kind person, get married, have kids. That was my fairy tale. I just want to have kids. I want to meet the Prince Charming. I want that. And I couldn't. I flew out to see my brother, Kenny. I stayed with him, you know, and it was a sunny day like it was today, and I was tired of the snow, and I moved out here, and I wish I could say I got sober right away, but I had to go out there and really hammer it for 5 more years, and I did that, and you know what? And they say it's my greatest blessing. It kicked my butt, and it's my greatest blessing because, you know, it got me here. It got me to you, and when I got here, you know, thank God I walked into a room like this, people who knew what they were doing. Examples of sitting in the same chair, quiet, respectful, so you could hear the message, you know? And I told you, I just wanted to be I just wanted to meet the Prince Charming. I just wanted to have kids. I wanted to have a quiet mind and be useful. And I did, you know, I said, all right, I surrender. I got a sponsor, you know, and she got me busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and not in that, she just showed me. And I'll tell you what, I got that Prince Charming. You know, I got him in Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't believe it. But I went. I went and did my commitment. I went to the Wednesday night big meeting where it became my home group. And this man was sitting on the curb doing his commitment like he's supposed to. And I fell off the curb and he scooped me up. You know, and I was newly sober and he left me alone. I turned 1 year sober. We started dating the old-fashioned way, you know, and a year later we got married. You know, I have been monogamous for 24 years to the same man. I've been monogamous 24 years. We have two beautiful kids. They have never seen their mom and dad drunk. They see God. They know God. Our girl kind of stumbled a little, but she sees God. Because you guys, she sees God in you. She knows Mark. She sees our Harris, the guy that's named after Johnny. Harris is 17 years old. He got up to take his AP class today. I'm like, you know, God. So I am so overpaid. So overpaid. Thank you. You know, and today I get to work with little TKs. Parents trust me. They love me. They say, thank you. Thank you for teaching my kid. And that's not me. That is you. I take you into the classroom because of myself. How can I give? You know, so thank you. I really have to go back to first things first, live and let live. And I really have to easy does it. Thank you.